You're listening to episode 31 of Fear the Boots interview series. In this interview, we talk with Mike Brodeur. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's Julia.
I'm Mike.
Yes, Mike joining us.
What have you done with Pat?
Well, there is a Pat-sized cage in my basement. And you know those old Play-Doh things with the big die where you push the Play-Doh out in different shapes? I have a star with his name on it.
Nice. Mike, that got dark.
Well, Mike has a different distinction other than sexually abusing Pat. That's pretty much
it. Well, no, I didn't even go into the gutter. I didn't go sexual. I was going to grind him up.
But it's Pat.
You mentioned Pat. You went into the gutter. But Mike has an interesting designation or accomplishment, I suppose, as being our first ever local interview subject. Our interviews have always been done remotely over Skype or some equally shitty program. And this is the first time we've actually had somebody that we were interviewing, at least to the best of my recollection, sit here in my house at the mics and record with us. I'm going to have Mike introduce himself, and we got a whole bunch of stuff we're going to talk to him about. But before I do that, I got two announcements I want to knock out of the way real quick. First off, Derek Knutson, good friend of the show. Yes. He's the guy who runs the increasingly guilt-filled fundraisers every year.
He tries to up the level of guilt every year.
He was the one that had the injured puppies serving America.
These were dogs who served our country in the military.
No, I remember. Right. Yeah, I
wounded. And
I don't know what the heck he's going to come up with. I don't know how you outdo that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's like if you don't contribute to this, you hate America and you hate puppies.
Yes,
I mean, come on,
injured puppies,
who got injured serving you.
Yes.
Protecting your freedoms.
Doing things.
Unless you're not an American, then screw you.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I just feel real guilty over this.
But what if you found out I was not an American?
Well, then you were a Canadian.
Then you got to walk home. I mean,
yeah. Then I'll call ICE.
What are they going to do about it?
Probably nothing. So Derek right now is running a Kickstarter for a universal role-playing system. It's designed to be a very simplified rule system, very simplified, very flexible, that's meant to be useful to experienced role players, but also very accessible to anyone that's at the entry level. If you are interested in backing this, I hope you'll at least go out there and take a look at the video he's got out there and some of the stuff he's got to say about it. And if you don't, he will make you feel guilty about something. I'm sure like 50 cents out of every dollar is going to like support orphans that feed other orphans.
got hurt serving your country.
The orphan warrior country. Orphans in combat zones, soup kitchen.
Now, see, I was going to go immediately dark and go to orphan Soylent Green.
Yeah, that's right.
Specific type of orphan.
The soup is orphan.
Feed orphans. Yeah.
Feed orphans, other orphans.
Yeah. See, that's why you got to contribute so it doesn't come to that.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is there is a system agnostic advice book for game masters that's been released. It's called Odyssey, the Complete Game Master's Guide to Campaign Management. And this was put out by two guys, Phil and Walt, great guys. Both of them are listeners to Fear the Boot. Much love for these guys. They put this book out, System Agnostic Advice on How to Run Your Role-Playing Game. They'd written a book before this called Never Unprepared, the Complete Game Master's Guide to Session Prep. Which is nominated for a 2013 Origins Award for Best Game-Related Publication, and also took a, looks like an Emmy, or whatever the heck that's worth, probably nothing.
This was utterly unsolicited, but I actually have a copy of that
Do
book.
You really?
I bought myself from one of my stores, and it's excellent. It really, really is great advice. I'm a big dork, I love role-playing games, and I really like reading game theory.
Well, let's get down to what matters most. You can only trust any reference guide insofar as its references. And this book references Fear the Boot.
That's right.
Of course.
All right. So for that reason alone, you need to pick it up because I cannot send you any better place for advice. I mean,
other than Fear the Boot.
Yeah, right. Precisely. Yes. You're already listening to Fear the Boot. So the next best thing you can do is go someplace that analyzes and expounds upon our ideas.
That's right.
So, all right, all jokes aside, that is Odyssey. Once again, I'll put a link to this, as always, in the show notes. If you want to check out Derek's Kickstarter or you want to pick up a copy of Odyssey and help craft your games a little bit better in a very, very wonderful setup that references a very, very wonderful show, then I'll put all the links for that in the show notes so you guys can go out there and do it. All right, so let's get down to the issue at hand. Mike, you want to tell us who you are?
Sure. My name is Mike Brodeur. I'm the general manager of
Brodeur. It's not Brodeur.
Brodeur. As in door, like that door.
Like
over
a bro door.
Yeah. Well, it's actually it's actually a shortened version.
Do you
version.
Play GameCube with your door?
I do
Madden
not know, but yeah. it means embroiderer of the vine.
Wow.
My ancestors, that's awesome.
Yeah, my ancestors were all winemakers in France before
An
they
embroiderer
moved.
Of the vine? This sounds like something.
Embroiderer of the vine. Yeah, okay. It's a very pretentious way of saying.
No, it sounds like something elves would do.
Yeah, I love elves, but that's my brother's going to hear this and he's going to kick me in the dice bags. But no, so I'm the general manager of a 4-store comic and game chain here in St. Louis. I've been a retailer for about 11 years. I've been a gamer for the just over 25 years, I would estimate.
Let me give you guys a little bit of context on the shop that they run on Fantasy Shop, which is the name of the chain, to kind of explain why you ought to care about Fantasy Shop.
Has anybody ever come into the Fantasy Shop and said, hey, where are the sex toys?
With alarming regularity.
Yes.
In fact, we've got a store in North County, and there used to be Fantasy Video, then us, then a little bit further north on Lindbergh, Fantasy Coachworks. So we would get phone calls for one another. But my favorite is, I was working one day when I first started, I was working at the store. We had just moved from Hazelwood to Florissant, and a guy comes in and goes, I'm looking for the husband at home. And I'm like, I'm sorry, sir. I'm looking for the husband at home. I'm like, I'm sorry, man, you're going to have to speak up. And he goes, I'm looking for the motion lotion. I'm like, we sell a different kind of fantasy. You're looking for the video place. They're south on Lindbergh. Yeah. Now it happens. Phone calls. We used to get people who would call up and want things done to their cars, thinking we were Fantasy Coachworks. So we were like, yeah, dude,
which
come
is
in.
It's not local. Let's say custom auto body shop.
They put like spinners.
And you want to get like ground effects or get your car lifted up or whatever. Fantasy Coachworks does that.
I'm not used to speaking to a broad audience that might not necessarily know what I'm talking about. Well, anyway, we'd be like, yeah, dude, come on in. We're actually running a special on that. 25% off. Come in and talk to Daryl. Yeah, my name's Daryl. I'm here until 6. Yeah. That didn't win us any friends.
But Fantasy Shop has been a fixture within the local gaming community here in St. Louis for decades.
Since 1981 is when Dave opened his first store in St. Charles.
And they have been recognized as a model of success within game shops. And I'm not just saying this is really true. There is a show that's run every year called GTS. And what GTS stands for is the Gamma Trade Show. And Gamma is the Game Manufacturers Association. All right. So basically, it's an industry trade group for people that make, distribute, publish, sell game material, okay, for tabletop games. And Fantasy Shop, specifically the owner of the chain, Dave, has been speaking at the GTS shows, basically giving panels explaining here's how you set up and run a successful store in an industry where game stores fail with, I'd say, shocking regularity.
More than restaurants, I would wager.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone listening to this show would be shocked by the regularity. But it's within an industry that has this history of shops opening and closing with equal regularity.
Oh, sure.
They have been around for decades, and Dave has been brought out to GTS to speak and to try and teach other people how to run stores successfully. Mike, you are now the general manager of the chain,
right?
And you spoke at GTS now for several years, and you're being brought back again this coming year.
Right. Hopefully I'll be doing my own seminars at GTS about management, about hiring, and about the initial what we call boot camp training for an employee before they're turned over to their specific location.
But there is something that has kind of been chewing at the back of my brain for some time now, which is
it an alien?
No, it's actually like a quantum parasite.
Nice.
And yeah. I wake up every morning and don't remember anything else about my life.
Yes.
And Jolene Blalock has to re-explain to me how I got there and what occurred. It's actually, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, pretty nice.
It's kind of cool. You wake up to Jolene Blalock's fake boobs every morning. I mean, it's
kind of, you don't have any guilt of, everything that you've done previously.
Precisely.
You may have motorboated her. I did not know it.
But you could video that.
I know that Dave and Kel would not be pleased with me using my time to talk about boobs, but I have to say, I've never been a fan of the fake boob. It's not my thing.
Well, here's my take on that, since this is really related to the show.
Yeah.
So I'm recording this show tomorrow night called Kick to the Dice Bags.
Kick to the Dice Bags.
Actually, talk about this sort of thing. Would you guys like to be on it?
But here's the thing, though. This show now has been going on for over 7 years. Okay, so we're closing on about 7.5 years. And in 7.5 years, we have talked about so many angles of role-playing games, writing them, running them, GMing them, playing them, the mathematics behind them, distribution, publication, sales, marketing. But the one thing that we have never really dedicated a thorough examination of...
Fake boobs.
Fake boobs.
That's every other Kick the Dice Bags episode.
Is retail.
Retail, yeah.
Retail. We have never really talked about retail except in the most passing of terms. Mike, I first met you, and I don't think you even recall this, because I know because I actually brought this back up to you, when you were working at one of the locations of the Fantasy Shop that has since been merged with the St. Charles location.
I was back, was that O'Fallon, Missouri?
Yes, you were back working at O'Fallon location.
That. Wow.
And I actually came out there at the time.
Shame on me.
This was back when ZiggurotCon was running, which was...
I do remember now.
And I came out there basically looking, because you saw, I was there with a friend of mine, we had this like 2-foot-tall stack of books, and you're like, what the heck are you guys doing?
Right.
And I explained to you, hey, we're supporting this charity. We're sending it over to Iraq for the people that are serving over there. At which point you guys, you know, cut us a great deal on those books, which is something we really appreciated. And I stop in every software I catch up with you.
But what? You don't remember him because you're a jerk.
No, I don't remember that moment. I remember ZiggurotCon, actually.
So he remembered what mattered. All right. Mm-hmm. So let's get down then to talking about kind of the nuts and bolts of the friendly local gaming store. And I want to start on that word, because that is something that I talked to you and Dave about at length. I guess maybe it was about a year or so ago.
Yeah, it was Ed Healy was coming in.
That's
town.
Correct.
Yeah, I recall.
Ed Healy and I came up there, and at one point, like Chad stopped by and a couple other guys stopped by, and we sat in the back office and talked to you guys at length, which is one of the worst truths. And I'm going to say that this is a truth, not a complete truth, but there certainly is truth behind the stereotype. Is that you walk into a gaming store or comic shop or anything like that, and it is one of the most unwelcoming places on the face of the earth. You just have some obnoxious, opinionated, condescending fat beard who sits behind the counter. And from the moment...
fat and I have a beard, and I am condescending.
I'm fat, but I can't grow a beard because I'm French-Canadian.
From the moment you walk in to the moment you walk out, you feel like you have broken into somebody's home.
Right. So you walk into the store... And I know Dan's a gun guy, I'm a gun guy, and if you ever go into a gun store, it's a very similar experience where if you are not on a first-name basis with the person that runs the place, the person behind the counter, you get the sense that you are not welcome here. And that primarily is, in my experience, is that game stores, gun stores, whatever, are run by people who are not business people, but they opened it up because they wanted to have, and this is going to sound insulting, but they wanted to have a clubhouse where they could have their friends hang out.
Right.
And there's a lot of people, and I'm trying to say this diplomatically, there's a lot of people that go about the business the wrong way. I don't have a second job. Dave and Kelly Wallace live in Colorado Springs. They just bought their first RV. They're planning on traveling the country. They're absentee owners. They have developed a business model that works so well that they can take someone like me, Dave's protege. I prefer the term lickspittle. they can take me. I can run the day-to-day operations of Dave's business. Dave and Kel can communicate with me with regularity via Skype, through email, whatever. But they don't have to be there hands-on. But more than a lot of people who have businesses, they don't have to have a second job and the game store's their hobby. Gaming's their hobby.
Let's talk, though, about this process by which you find people and you prep them for the job. Because this is one of the things that we talked at length with you and Dave about. And I was pretty blunt with Dave when I was talking to him. And I said, look, I remember back as an adolescent, for anyone who's new to the show or doesn't know, I'm 36 years old. OK, so I mean, you go back 15, 20 years. I would walk in the Fantasy Shop, and just like any other gaming store, a lot of other gaming stores, I shouldn't say all of them, but like a lot of other gaming stores, I felt once again like I was intruding someplace where I was not wanted. And I kind of stopped going for a while, just stayed away from it.
Yeah.
And then in more recent years, came back in and suddenly noticed that people were welcoming, people were friendly, people were knowledgeable about the products and interested in sharing that knowledge. They're enthusiastic, interested in sharing that enthusiasm. And I kind of just sat there and observed that for a little bit. And then when I had that opportunity to sit there at length and talk with you and Dave, I'm kind of like, walk me through what happened here.
It was by design. Back in 1981, back when I was a little kid, probably didn't go into the fantasy shop until probably 82, 83. It's my older brother, long story. But there was only one place to buy that stuff. There was no internet. There was no Amazon. There weren't a variety of other game stores in town where you could buy that stuff. You couldn't go to Barnes & Noble easily and find, or Books a Million or whatever, and find players' handbooks. So all Dave had to do was get the product and put it on the shelf, and it sold itself. So you didn't have to be nice. You didn't have to be knowledgeable. You didn't have to be friendly. That you were the destination, and that was the only destination in town to go to. But as time progressed and more product became available and more avenues became available for the purchasing of product, we had to evolve our business model. We had to get good at retail. We had to get good at customer service. Ultimately, we had to get good at management so we could teach our store managers to properly manage their personnel, so their personnel would properly manage the clientele in the store.
If you don't mind me asking, how did you guys go about doing that? What was that transition like? What are the kinds of things that you teach people now that you didn't then? What are the kinds of traits that you look for in somebody now that you didn't then?
What prompted that? Did you guys get like a lot of complaints?
There's more eye contact than I expected.
What would you prefer?
I like it. I like it.
Is it uncomfortable if I just stare at you?
Hi.
Chad's cute, folks, by the way, just so you guys are. I mean, I know he's taken and I'm married and.
That would be weird.
Yeah. I've been in a relationship for 21 years. I use some spice.
Some spice, a little different. I bet she doesn't have as nice a beard as I do.
She does not. Yeah. She's beautiful. But anyway.
Are you saying I'm not?
Yeah, I'm not into
chicken
beards.
This is a complete package, man. You know what I do to
All right, I've devolved. Yes, Dave, I'm not representing you well.
Jiggle it.
So, here. Okay.
I'm sorry, Chad, you were going to ask a question, and then I tried to seduce you.
I'm starting to understand what the business model is.
Right? To seduce men into
being. Well, it was like those rumors that they said about
you
the
really
Spartans.
You really did pick
that,
something up from the sex shop.
You would really, I mean, if you loved the man you fought next to, you know, you would fight harder mm-hmm. for him.
Yeah.
That's how we do.
Yeah, ask the Thracians how well that worked out. Yeah.
You should have heard us in the car.
You just dropped history on me.
I did drop history on you.
You should have heard us in the car. We
had a comic book moment.
We had a comic book moment. We like totally dorked out while these two were sitting in front going, oh my God, they're such nerds.
I was soaking wet in the rain and Chad was hanging upside down in the Spidey costume. Mm-hmm. And it was like that.
Actually, though, and Julie and I really were, God's honest truth, talking about sports. Yeah.
That's also true. But anyway, you're right. Asked a question and I cut you off.
Before you talk about like what you did to mm-hmm. make this transition happen, I was curious what prompted the transition to better customer service. Like complaints, falling sales, or just a self-awareness?
Yes. So here's what happened. We went through a terrible time financially in our company's history where we were being just ruthlessly mismanaged. I know the people who were running the company at the time will likely not hear this, but Dave and Kelly were in a situation where we were very close to bankruptcy if something did not happen. And at one time we owned 9 stores in 3 different states. Now we just have 4 stores in the St. Louis area. Things were that bad for us that we had to do some serious remanagement and personnel terminations. So Dave and Kel came back. Dave at the time was working for John, the guy who owns Troll and Toad in Kentucky. Big internet sales site. Dave came back. Kelly came back with him. They both were no longer working for Troll and Toad, and they terminated the 3 personnel that are working in the office and took the company back over and righted the ship. And we were hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. We were in a bad situation, and it really came down to that no one gave a shit. It was that simple. The difference between then and now is the people who we look for, we really try to have them invested and have people who care about the company. I care about the company so much that how it is seen by the public, how it is seen by the consumer, how it is seen by other retailers affects how I sleep. It's important for me that the company does well. You know, Dave's a young man. He's only 55 years old, but someday I'd love to buy the company from him. I've learned so much from him about business, about management, about retail, that it's been a tremendous life experience. And I know that sounds kiss-assy, but I can say that because he's never going to hear it.
So. He doesn't know his newfangled computers work.
Yeah. Oh, dude, you have no idea. Oh, my goodness. But we really...
What does that say about trolling Toad?
Well, Dave was a management guy, not a computer guy.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it was really about management. But it came down to, we love this stuff. I do. I mean, I'm a gamer. I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons since I was 12 years old. I was first exposed to it when I was a tiny, tiny little kid. I don't even remember how old I was, living in Salem, Missouri, and my dad and his friends were all play freaky deaky, you know, late 70s hippies. But I got into the hobby. I love the hobby. The people who work for me love the hobby, whether they're comic book people or board game people, or they play Magic the Gathering or any of the variety of products that are in the industry. The important part is that I'm not trying to sell you anything. I don't even care if Chad comes in and leaves with nothing in his hands. What I care about is that Chad comes in or Julia comes in and they're greeted, they're approached, they're spoken to, someone's genuinely interested in providing them good service and behaving as an ambassador for the hobby. And I know that sounds like a canned line, but it's true. This Fate book that's sitting in front of me.
Right.
In the store, I represent Fate. I represent Evil Hat. I'm selling their product. Now, ultimately, I'm paying my bills because of it. But my job is to be an ambassador for this fun. And you're going to spend your dollar someplace. I want you to spend it on something that you enjoy. And the best way that I can sell things is if I enjoy them, too. And so we needed people that cared about the product. But also we needed people that cared about the success of the business. And never before has the morale been higher and the communication at the company been better than in the last few years. Now, coincidentally, I've been the general manager for almost 2 years, but I won't, you know, pat myself on
you
the back.
You won't shoot your own horn.
Yeah, that's
right. Correlation does not prove causality.
Right, correct.
So, except maybe
in this case.
Yeah.
Now, get a raise, Dave.
Let me ask you a very, very blunt question, which I think cuts right to the core of the nature of local gaming store in today's marketplace of RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
I can sit on my ass at home in front of my computer and get a book off of Amazon.
In your underwear.
In my underwear, if that. And get a book off of Amazon. Yep. And I look as good as my voice. And get a book off of Amazon at a low price. I'm a Prime member, free delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Why go to a gaming store? What reasons would you give someone like me?
That guy in this hypothetical, that guy is not my customer. It's just true.
Explain that.
So the person who's my customer is the guy who comes in that wants the experience, that wants the knowledge. You can read as many reviews as you want about a game product.
Right.
You can listen to as many podcasts as you want about a game product. You can sit and look at your computer and you can search for the best price. But nothing sells a game, nothing sells a car, nothing sells a product like that personal experience. You come into my store, I have a fun, exciting, informative environment where you get to escape.
Right.
You're not thinking about your car payment. You're not thinking about problems with your spouse. You're not thinking about X, Y, and Z or your boss who's a jerk. You come in and you are in the game store. All the rest of the world is out there and you and I get to talk about games.
Okay, for a moment, let's deconstruct that idea.
Sure.
It's obviously easy to throw out words like, you know, immersive and fun
exciting.
Okay.
Right.
Give me some steps. What does that environment look like? How do you actually go about taking an empty space and turning it into that?
Ooh.
Now, I realize this is a huge
It's only
one.
An hour show, right?
Yeah.
Well, let me start by saying that all things, whether it's with my wife, whether it's with children, whether it's with spouse, whether it's with the consumer, more importantly, whether it's with my employees, my store managers,
right.
It's all about cultivating a good relationship.
Okay.
So that relationship is going to be about communication. So what I want to do is I want to get to know you, but I want to do so in a way that is sincere and not salesman-y. I want to pay attention to where you're at in my store. I want to see the product that you're looking at. And then I want to go, oh, okay, so I've watched this guy. He's been in here for 10 minutes. He's picked up one comic book and four different role-playing game books, three of them that were all Pathfinder. But he never picked up the core rule book. This guy plays Pathfinder. Well, I know Daniel is a huge, he's not, but I know Daniel's a huge Pathfinder fan. So I'm going to say, hey, Daniel, that guy's been looking at Pathfinder for the last 10 minutes. Why don't you go strike up a conversation with him? Now, that guy doesn't have to buy anything, but hopefully by the end of the conversation, Daniel knows the guy's name. He knows some information about the person and their interest in Pathfinder. I'm building a relationship with that individual. So ultimately, by the end of the day, customer A, John, whatever, John is going to go home and he's going to be on Amazon and he can get that Pathfinder core rulebook for $40 instead of $50. But he knows that Daniel up at the store is his buddy, and they communicate and they have a relationship, and John would rather spend his $10 with me. So they're voting with their dollar. That makes sense?
Absolutely.
That's how I do everything.
Right.
Like, I would rather give somebody who has spent time on me like that money than just buy it online.
Right. And we get the, if you can edit the word scumbag out of it, we get the people that come in and they want to mine all of your information. They want to mine all your expertise. And then they want to take all that information and go home and price shop. But that's okay. That's just part of doing business.
Yeah. You can't psychically know why somebody walked into the store. Right. So that just goes with the territory.
You know, I'm that guy who isn't your customer.
Right.
I'm the guy who gets it on Amazon because I'm a sort of do-it-yourselfer and I'm a very opinionated guy. So I don't need your opinion.
Sure.
You know, as horrible as that sounds, but
it doesn't sound horrible at all.
Yeah.
I'm quite the opposite.
But I appreciate that.
But you like talking about gaming.
Yes, I do.
So I have plenty of people and I'm sure Dave would not necessarily be crazy about this, but I distinguish between customers and visitors.
Mm-hmm.
Both are important. I'd rather have customers than visitors. I'm happy to have visitors. So if you come into the shop and you poke your head back in the office and I'm working and you want to bullshit about the latest thing that you just bought off of Amazon, well, I love this stuff. So I don't, as a fan, I don't care where you bought it. I just care that you're telling me about it. So,
and I will have to say that, like I said, I am the Amazon. I look at reviews online and I hear stuff from people online and then I just buy it online or download it or whatever. But every year, our forums, the Fear the Boot forums, runs a Secret Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And I get somebody, you know, they don't know who I am, but I get their interest list.
Right.
And I'm like, this is stuff that I am not interested in and I have no clue about.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not a subject matter expert in this. And guess where I go? Uh-huh. I go to the fancy shop.
Thank
you. I'm like, hey, because there's one right down the street from where I live. And I've explained to the guy behind it. He's like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, oh, good. I'm like, I got a guy. He's into comic books, but he's into these kind of comic books that I don't read. And I have no idea what to get him. And can, you know, and then, yeah. And it's a very easy process. Mm-hmm. It's a very easy that they slide. It's like you give them a little bit of information.
Right.
And then they start working with it and then they find something. And I have done that at least the past 3 years.
Right. Well, and I hate to make a lame analogy or a lame correlation, but it's sort of like computer games versus tabletop role playing games. I can go home and I can log on to WoW and I can chat about politics or the latest day's news or sports figures. And I can kill this monster to get this treasure so I can go kill this next monster to get that next treasure. But it's not the same thing. That's Mick gaming. It's not the same as sitting down with a group of people that I'm passionate about, that I care about, that I'm friends with, and sharing a narrative storytelling experience. I think retail shopping is the same way. I mean, I don't want to romanticize it, but buying from a store should be a good experience. It should be a different experience that if I'm just going to ask you if you want fries with that, you may as well buy it at home.
Yeah. And shopping on like Amazon, there's the product, there's the price point, and there's reviews. It's all very sterilized.
Right.
There's a sales technique of, you know, say this, we have this fate. Oh, and I'm doing the podcasting thing where I'm using a physical object to make a point. But so I have this fake core book in my hand and I'm trying to sell it to you. And I'm like, here, you know, that's really neat. It's a good book. It's I handed it to him. And then
those guys, spirit of the century. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then I take it away from you and then you want it back. And then you have this sort of property ownership.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
See, I worked at Victoria's Secret for 4.5 years. And so I totally understand that because women don't buy bras online. And so that's all we got were people coming in.
Right.
That was our, like, I was a manager as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our biggest thing is all about experience.
Right.
Taking them back, measuring them, making sure. This is probably not the podcast to be talking this.
But, no, believe you me, this is the podcast to be talking about.
You know, and it got
like, I'm here.
And like, I ended up becoming a bra specialist and I literally lived in fitting rooms. Staring at chicks' breasts all the time, which I know that's really exciting for all of you.
Slow down.
Julia lived the dream.
So you're in the fitting room all day.
No, but the coolest thing about it was, the best part about it was having somebody come in and tell me, I can't find a bra I like, nothing's comfortable, there's nothing out there that works. And then I put them in something and it's the perfect bra for them.
Right.
And they get to leave and they buy like 5 of them and I didn't even tell them to. I didn't feel like I forced them to.
Right.
I was literally just trying to make them get what they wanted and what they needed.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm a firm believer in that.
I love that rush. I love communicating with the customer. And the whole reason I'm on the show is that I've listened for a long time in my office and I actually left a message on the show notes for Dan mm-hmm. saying, basically, I like the show. It fills a void because I don't get to talk to the consumer anymore. But that, honestly, that ambassadorship, if you will, that's the best part of the job. Mm-hmm. I love when somebody comes in, even if they're looking for a product that I don't like, there is a commonality between all of the gaming experience, all of the comic book experience. People love that escapism. And that's what we sell, whether it's through comic books or card games or board games or role-playing games. And I love talking about that. I love communicating that with people.
Is that part of your core intent? Is that even perhaps where the name Fantasy Shop comes from, that you are trying to sell the escape?
Yes. No, they were a sex shop before.
Well, I realized that. Out. Yeah, all right.
And
they had to fill something with something.
And then that rental.com place that I won't give the privilege of mentioning stole my clientele.
That's right.
You should see Dan's so red right now.
So...
No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, that's exactly what we want. We want to share in that love of the hobby with you, the consumer.
How do you sell things you don't know? And what I mean by that is, let's say I walk into your shop while we were at dinner. We were talking about what you're into, what you're not into. You know, you play this kind of role playing game, not that kind of role playing game, whatever. Let's say I walk into the store. And one of the things you said is you're not into anime. You're not.
Right.
And I'll just make a presupposition here and extend that to manga as well.
Sure.
I know that you guys have a selection of manga graphic novels. You know, right. I've been in your shop. I've seen them. Let's say I walk in there and that is my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the guy that just so happens to be working when I walk through the door.
All right.
And that's what I'm into.
So the first couple things that I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you what titles you like. Okay, so you like Evangelion. Well, I've never read Evangelion. Tell me about it. And then you start going, oh, these robots and there's this and that and the other. And you're starting to explain to me the product that you like. And I'm listening for, okay, giant robots. All right, got it. Big guns. Got it. Robots. Got it. More robots. Monsters. Got it. Okay, great. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not really well versed on the thing. I've never read it, but I do have X, Y, and Z that are sort of look like they might be in that genre. So let me point you in that direction. That'd be my first step. My second step is, do I have somebody that works in the company that knows about anime, that knows about manga, that while this individual is checking out the other stuff that I may be striking out with, I'm going to get on the phone and I'm going to call up so-and-so and I'm going to ask him, okay, I got somebody here. He's looking at manga, looking at this, that, and the other, and they're going to start giving me recommendations and giving me advice. So
right.
Even though I can't answer the question, and I always tell trainees.
So no, you guys have like a call network, so to speak?
Yeah. So we've got four stores.
Okay.
I've got 15 employees that work under me between my four store managers
right.
and then the clerks. Right.
Okay.
So we try to keep very good track of who knows what in the company. So, for example, when I was working the sales floor all the time, I was the role-playing go-to guy. So if somebody was working and they had a question about role-playing games and they didn't know how to answer that question, call Mike. I have a question about old Silver Age comic books. Okay, I'm going to call Rick. I've got a question about Magic. Well, I'm going to call one of the people at St. Charles who knows about Magic. So we do.
Somebody's got a question about riffs. Call the police.
But we do try to do a couple of things. One is to make sure that we are in good communication with one another, that we know who works at what store and what their areas of expertise are. But also every month we do two manager meetings. One manager meeting is regarding product. The other manager meeting is regarding staffing, procedure, what's happening on in the industry. And at our product meetings, we'll do product reviews where we'll basically try to give an elevator pitch for one comic and one game per manager. And then those are written up and either posted on our website or taken back and put in a binder in the store. And then the managers share those with their employees. So they come back with several different product reviews that their employees can kind of read, get the elevator pitch, and expand their product knowledge. So we try to do a little bit of both.
A binder.
Yeah.
You guys need a wiki.
Well, you know,
there's like the cost versus the value.
Right. Well, and if there is one thing as a company that we do bad and that we will admit that we are very, very bad at, that we
it's do grammar. You do it poorly.
Poorly. Yes. Thank you. Yes. I do grammar poorly. I don't do anything well for, in fact, we're terrible with the internet. We're terrible with Facebook and our website.
Yeah. Your website stuff. Blows.
Yeah. No, agreed. Totally.
Wrong.
What's that?
Isn't that what you're supposed to be good at?
So
just kidding.
But here's what we are good at. Conversation is...
Which is precisely what you want
right,
when you go into a shop like
that. I would much rather, as an individual, I would much rather sit down and communicate like this.
Yeah.
Because there's so much about you that talking to you online or looking at your Facebook doesn't tell me. Mm-hmm. Your posture, your body language, your eye contact, all of those things. There's an art to conversation. And I'm just not good. I don't care about computers. They're cold.
What if
sterile,
you go on Facebook
boring.
And tell somebody it's not a library? It just seems like a non sequitur. It doesn't fit into my shopping experience.
Oh, I tell you what, man. I have done this is not a library every which way you can think of. I have tried it. Yeah. That's a pet peeve of mine. It really is. But anyway, that's
people
a
treating it like a library. Or
well, right. Yeah. So I pay electricity. I mean, yeah. the bills you'd not believe. I mean,
right.
Our store in St. Charles is 7,500 square feet, which is our store area, our promo area, basically our game mm-hmm. space,
yeah.
my office and our warehouse. Right. And people want to come in and they want to use my lights and my air conditioning and what have you. And they want to read 5-6 different comic books, or they want to read this role-playing game and memorize it for their game later that night or what have you. I've got no qualms with people shopping the material. That's what it's there for. But I mean, I'm not Borders, and Borders is closed for a reason. Yeah. And I firmly contend that they're encouraging the clientele to steal their product is one of the reasons that they're no longer open. If I sell this book for $25 and you come in and over the course of 3 days, you read it cover to cover so that you don't have to buy this book, you have essentially stolen $25 from me. It's no different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I've had exactly that conversation with customers. I'll see a guy, a speed reader, read almost an entire novel. I'm like, I sat down right across from him. I go, that's a good book, isn't it? He goes, yeah, yeah, it's really interesting. I said, are you going to finish it? He goes, yeah, I think so. I said, really? So you're going to buy it first? And he goes, well, I said, so you know you're stealing from me. That book I can see on the back cover is $12.99. You're going to read the whole thing, and then you're not going to pay me for it. You might as well just take that book and put it in your pants, man. Go ahead. Steal it, because that's what you're doing.
You know, I had never quite looked at it that way. And I think the reason I'd never looked at it that way is because I was caught on the opposite extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the really negative experiences that I had had in a variety of shops, let's take comic books as an example.
Sure.
Okay, I'm a person, I know a fair amount about comic books just by virtue of the hobbies that I'm in and the people that I associate with. Okay, so I can tell you quite a bit about comics that I've never even read. But there have been very, very few titles that I have ever followed in my life. And those titles that I have followed only for very short periods. For example, I followed Wildcats when it was good, which was about 4 issues.
When Alan Moore was writing it?
I'm trying to think, who was it that wrote it right out of the gate?
I don't know.
Yeah, whoever was it wrote right out of the gate, it was good for about 4 or 5 issues and then all went to hell. But the point being, it's not uncommon for me, for example, when I'm in a game store, such as your own,
mm-hmm.
I might be a little bit interested in the board games because of the fact that I don't know board games as well as I do role-playing games.
Right.
Role-playing games, I might look at the covers just to see if there's something I haven't seen. Chances are, given what I do through the hobby of podcasting about role-playing games, I'm at least aware of what they are. There's really nothing there that I need to learn. I either want it or I don't. Comic books is different. If I'm going to buy a comic book because, you know, I'm a geek, I like superheroes, whatever. So it's like, I feel like I should like these things.
Right.
And so I'm going to pick up the comic book, kind of flip through it and say, okay, is there something about the art? Is there a little bit of dialogue that catches my eye that makes me say, yeah, I think I'm going to try this out. I'm going to pick this up from these guys, you know, get them to create a pull list for me. Mm-hmm. Who knows what? And I have been in several comic shops, including one that was located out in South City, which no longer exists. This is one where Chad and I had a really bad experience.
Oh, yeah.
Where, I mean, we just went and like cracked open the books, like flipped through a few pages instantly. This is not a library. Get out. And it's like, dude, we weren't reading the book. It was just kind of like we're trying to get a sense of what's in there.
Right.
And I realize there's probably no cut and dry methodology to this.
There
is. But I'm curious, how do you kind of make that distinction between someone like me who is not trying to exhaustively consume the substance, but is just trying to see, do I even like this?
Well, I would tell you the same thing that I tell any of my employees. Err in favor of the consumer. Assume that they're not abusing you. If you think that they're being abusive, they are. If you're not sure, then they're not. It is very, very obvious who is taking advantage of you and who is not. If I watch a guy come into my store and he looks at 6 or 7 or 8 or 12 different comic books, he stands up, picks them up one at a time, thumbs through them, puts them back. That guy's browsing. Somebody comes in and they walk my shelves, my first week new comic books. They grab 6 of them and they sit down in a chair. And they get nice and comfortable and they start reading real slowly. First book, page 1, and they're going through. They're two distinctly different experiences. one person is obviously taking advantage of me. He's coming in, he's grabbing books, he's hopping a seat, and he's reading those books for free. The other guy's shopping. So if you're not sure, let it go, is right. generally what I tell people.
I want to talk about the interaction between the bricks and mortar store and the digital world. I want to move away from online sales like sure. Amazon. Right. I want to talk about two specific things here. First off, what has been the impact, you think, of ebooks on what you guys do? Someone who maybe doesn't per se have anything that would keep them from going into a store to buy a game, except for the fact that they would rather have their entire gaming library on a tablet mm-hmm. as opposed to a bookshelf
or
of books.
Or why have a pull list when you can have Comicology?
Right. Yeah. It's an excellent question. I have a Kindle and I love reading on it. And I have a tablet and I have not uncorked reading comics on it because I'm afraid. But as a gamer, let's tackle comic books first because it'll be easier.
Okay.
So digital comics are a really big growing portion of the comic book industry, but they're still about 1%, last I checked, 1% of all comic book sales. So it's fairly insignificant by comparison. Comic book fans are all very tactile. They want to have the physical copy. They want to have the thing.
Sure.
I mean, there's even a great divide between people who read compilations, trade paperbacks, versus people who must collect every issue singly
sure.
once a month. Those people want to have the physical copy. When it comes to the role-playing game realm, if anything, it's been our experience that we have seen people have a broader interest. They can go, they can get a digital copy from DriveThruRPG or what have you. They can try something new, less expensive. And then oftentimes people will come in and they will buy supplements for that game from us. They'll buy their peripherals, meaning dice, miniatures, etc. from us. Or they'll say, I really liked that book. I want to have the physical copy of that book. And they'll come into the store to buy the physical copy of the hardcover, the main rule book, or whatever.
This also goes the other direction. There's something that we have mentioned on the show in the past. I'd love to have you kind of reintroduce bits and mortar.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Everyone's familiar with the phrase brick and mortar, and bits and mortar is a pun on brick right. and mortar. Talk about bits and mortar.
Well, I'm going to come from a position of ignorance because I haven't dealt with it for about 2 years since I've been working back in the office. But in essence, it was a program set up with some of the small press, like the Indie Press Revolution guys and some of the small press RPGs, where you could go and you could go to your local game store. You could buy the physical copy of the book and then get a redemption code that you would then take home, log onto their website, and then you could download the PDF version of the book that you just purchased.
I actually really like that idea.
Yeah, it's good. And it encourages people to try new gaming, to go to their local game stores.
I don't know. I buy dice and minis and crap from you guys all the time.
Well, thank you.
Quite sad. Like, you guys were like on it with those damn fudge dice. Like, let me tell you, we were starting. It was like right when Dresden Files came out, and there was like a shortage on fudge dice. I walked in, and I'm like, I need fudge dice, and they're like, we don't have them.
They're like,
and I'm
like, what are you?
What?
You're a girl.
No, they knew. Yeah, they're like, wait, there's a girl in our store.
You went to South County. That's a whole different demographic. Oh, they know what a girl is down there.
Yeah, there's a bunch of little Lindbergh girls running around down there. No, but actually, this is South City, the one I went to.
Oh, okay.
In Maplewood.
Oh,
but
sure.
I was like, I need.
Yeah, they
fudge
weren't
dice.
So sure what you were.
Yeah. I was like, I need fudge dice. They're like, we don't have them. Like, will you call me like literally the second you get them in your hands?
They're
I have
yes,
six gamers.
Look, I
that
want
need
your
them.
Number. I will call you.
You want to know what purpose your Maplewood store serves? I'm going to set this out for you.
Sure. Sorry.
If I want a gaming product or want to talk to somebody at gaming products or whatever, or I just happen to be in the neighborhood and just, you know, want to stop by and see if you're under whatever, I'm going to go to St. Charles store.
Right.
The Maplewood store that is there for one reason. It's so I can stagger out of Schlafly across the street to look at role playing stuff
drunk
because I can't drive right now.
I think we did that together once.
It's like, you know, like you go through the grocery store and there's that impulse aisle.
Right.
The Maplewood store is like the impulse aisle that's outside of the Schlafly brewery. So I can come out of there and while I'm waiting on my chance to drive, I can make some impulse buys on games or comics or whatever.
I just live 2 minutes from it. So it's like the quickest one for me. I work by South County. Right. I live by Maplewood.
No, the Maplewood store, honestly, its purpose is profit. That store is fantantic.
Really?
Which is surprising. It's a pretty small store.
It is small.
Its operating costs between, payroll, you know, for personnel, insurance costs, rent, everything. That store is actually my second most profitable store.
Is it because Schlafly makes decision making more difficult and lowers inhibition? And
is it just sheer volume because of where it's located?
Everything's so cheap. Well, I mean, it's basic business. The amount of money that we spend on that store, well, it's less compared to the money we make. Right.
Yeah, because I was going to say, when I go in, it's usually pretty quiet there.
Yeah.
Versus some of the other ones.
The guy who's managing it now, Dan Kinsella, he's actually done a really, really great job. And I don't mean to disparage anybody who came before him, but he is the best manager I've seen in that store. And it really comes down to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. It comes down to investment. He's the first person who I've seen take over management of that store and actually be a leader for that store and actually be invested and treat it like it's his own. Right.
You guys obviously have a certain number of finite resources that you have to deal with.
Right.
But it strikes me that the one more than any other that sets a brick and mortar store apart from an online store is physical space, shelf space. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, off the top of my head, it strikes me that you have really about four or five things you have to fit onto that shelf space.
Mm-hmm.
Role-playing games. Okay. So books and dice, maps, maybe whatever. Miniature games, 40K, War Machine, Hordes, whatever. Collectible card games, comic books, and board games.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys strike that balance? How do you decide how much to set aside for each of those? Is there one that you tend to favor over the other? Do you guys look at something like, I mean, once again, just getting back to the sheer math of it, a box of Magic cards takes up a whole lot less room than a role-playing book does.
Right.
Yeah, because the interesting thing about Fantasy Shop was that years ago, back in the 90s, when they were doing hardcore porn, when they were doing hardcore porn, spinners and
yeah. Hardcore with two Ds.
That's right.
Wow.
You would go into a hobby shop, not necessarily fancy shop, and it's like, if I needed magic cards, I would go to the magic card shop where they had magic cards and Magic the Gathering t-shirts, and that was all they sold.
Right.
And then if I wanted a comic book shop, I would go to the comic shop where they had comics and then t-shirts that had comic books on them. Mm-hmm. And Fantasy Shop was like the only one where there was a sort of diversification of product there.
There's a couple things that I will say. That mentality, it's interesting. Mm. We've got people who still refer to us as the card shop.
Mm.
So, or the comic shop, or I'm going to go to the game store. So people, they recognize the diversity, but even in their language and their communication with one another, they refer to it as their specific interest. But diversity is the thing that we did from the very beginning, because early on, there was only a limited amount of product in any one area or any one genre of the hobby, whether it be comic or gaming. And so Dave could just afford to carry all of it. And then he always stuck with being diversified. And frankly, that has been proven to be the thing that has helped us weather a lot of financial storms. When the bottom fell out of Pokemon, for example, it hurt. We lost a lot of sales because people weren't buying Pokemon cards anymore. But card shops that were dedicated to specifically doing Pokemon, well, they closed their doors. Mm-hmm. And we had enough diversity to weather said storm. There's a great book, if anybody's actually interested in being a good retailer, there's a book out there by Paco Underhill called Why We Buy. And it's really interesting. And it gets into the psychology of why we as consumers purchase what we purchase and how we purchase what we purchase. And it goes into why grocery stores are laid up the certain way they are, why shelves are done the certain way that they are. And we do a lot of things wrong. I mean, as somebody who has worked for the company for 11 years, I can walk into a store and I can give you a litany of things that I would want to do differently. But one of the things that we do right is each store, we look at its sales trends, and then we try to cater the stock levels and the merchandising in that particular location based on what's moving. So, for example, our store in Florissant is what I like to call a 70-30. They're 70% comic books and 30% gaming. But interestingly enough, since the guy John Perks, who's been managing it for a little while now, for about almost 2 years? It been that long? Anyway, John's doing a tremendous job, and their gaming sales have skyrocketed since John's been managing the store. And a lot of that has to do with he's marketing it better and they're talking about it more. So he still does a significant amount of business in comic books by comparison, but it's about what he's displaying, what he's carrying, but more importantly, what we were talking about earlier, it's about what gets communicated. And he's a gamer. He loves games. So he talks about it.
Yeah, it strikes me as not just communication, but it's also what gets seen.
Sure. You're absolutely right.
Because one thing that a physical store can do that a website can kind of do through recommended items, but can't do as well, is very rapidly expose me to a lot of ideas.
Right.
For example, every year prior to our convention here in St. Louis, we have a group of people coming from out of town for tourism. Invariably, being gamers, they want to stop by a gaming shop, and I always take them up to the St. Charles Fantasy Shop. You've probably seen me bring them in. In fact, I brought them in not just, but, you know, a month or two or three ago here. Yep.
I remember.
And one of the things that I do while I'm there is I simply walk the store, and I look at all the things that I normally would not be exposed to, which is mostly going to be board games and comic books and things like that. But I'm able to be exposed to a lot of these ideas. And I remember in 2007, which is the one year that I went to the Gamma Trade Show in Las Vegas, and I actually sat in on one of Dave's panels, actually at the recommendation of Ryan Dancy, who's actually surprisingly kind of a weird boomerang. He pointed me right back to somebody who owns my local gaming store as someone that I ought to pay attention to. So it was kind of an interesting boomerang there. But I sat in on one of Dave's panels, and one of the things that he talked about was the diversity of products did not just protect you guys from passing market fads, but it also created this exposure or cross-pollination where maybe I get drug in there with somebody else who's a big fan of comics, and I don't give two craps about comics, but I go over and I start looking at collectible figurines. I don't necessarily mean like 40K. I mean like, you know, superhero statues or whatever. Or I start looking at board games, right? Just something other than whatever it is they're looking at. And I'm getting exposed to all these other ideas, and effectively, just by their very presence, being marketed to. And he talked at length about the importance of that. He also at the time mentioned the possibility of doing used video game sales, but I don't want to quote what he said because I don't recall what his verdict was on it.
We have not done that. We debated it for a long time. Ultimately, I think the conclusion that we came to was there's so much competition for that, and there's so much expertise out there. Yeah. It would be like if GameStop decided to start doing Pathfinder and Dungeons and Dragons and GURPS, and it's just so divergent from what they know and what they're good at. I think for us, it would have been a mistake. But you're right about what Dave said in terms of giving someone something interesting to look at that they may not have been exposed to. One of the things that we struggled with for a long time was female clientele. We have a lot more women shopping with the stores than we ever have before. And a lot of that was how we present ourselves, what kind of product mix we're carrying, and what kind of things do we have for wives and girlfriends and for female gamers that they would be interested in that we normally don't think about because the majority of the people working for the company are male.
Like the cute microbes?
Like the cute microbes. Yeah. You just made Dave's year.
Did I really? This is probably a really sick joke, but my really, really good friend who is gay got HIV for me for Christmas as a funny joke, and he found it hilarious.
Yes.
I love how the HIV microbe...
Do I have to edit that out?
No.
The HIV microbe has an AIDS ribbon, too.
Yeah, like, I love those damn things. Yeah. Like, it's sick. Like, I'm like, every time I go in and, like, I get distracted really easy, and so, like, all the guys will be looking at something, and I'm like, microbes, like, it's just like one of the first places I go and I look at all the different diseases and I'm like, look how cute this one is. It could kill you.
Because here's the challenge for us is I've got you, the gamer, right? I've got the guy who's looking for Battletech. Mm-hmm. I've got the guy who's looking for D&D. I've got the guy who's looking for Hellblazer. But what I don't have is that if his girlfriend's there, or if his mom's there, or if his grandma comes in and it's Christmas time and she's got a list, I don't have something for, and I don't mean to sound disparaging to say this, but I don't have anything for the uninitiated. So what I want to do is I want to create an environment where I still have my bona fides with the hardcore fan, but I have broad enough appeal for the uninitiated so that people who see the Game of Thrones TV show, they come into my store and they see, oh, the Game of Thrones board game. Oh, the Game of Thrones comic book. Oh, Dexter's a TV show. There's a Dexter comic book. I want to have something that is interesting to all facets inside the hobby, whether it's the hardcore or the casual fan.
It's interesting because you can see the change that your store made, and I hope that other stores would make too. 10 years ago, 2003, my gaming group was majority female, which back then that was the demographic wasn't quite there yet. but we just happened to be. We would go into a gaming shop because we had a gaming group, right? And we didn't have any books and we didn't have any real dice or anything. So we would go into a gaming store with some pretty attractive young women. And they would talk about, when we went in as a big group, we didn't really notice because we're just more paying attention to each other and the product. But then they would talk about how they would go in ones and twos, just themselves. And the guy behind the counter would be like, "Hi, do you have any dice or do you have any of this?" And he'd be like,
"Yes."
And then all the customers, too, would be these guys who would be like,
"This is real."
Right?
Yeah.
Skeevy creepers.
Yeah, this is real. But it's changed.
Right.
It's changed. I know it's changed because
the St. Charles location, the employee that I encounter most frequently on going in there, I don't know her name, and I apologize for that, a girl with red hair.
That's Stephanie. She's not with us anymore.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry to hear that. Yeah. But yeah, but she was the person that I saw most frequently upon going in there. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.